Good evening, everybody. My name is Chris, and I am an alcoholic. It's really great to be here. I was having conversations before the meeting a little bit about what this group is about. It kind of is a change in format for the area to have a one-hour speaker meeting. And I'm very, very lucky. I get to participate in a number of different areas around the tri-state area where meetings are being put together, solution-based meetings that are trying to get back to the basics, the 12-step basics of recovery, as it's laid out in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. And I find these places are like pockets of enthusiasm. You can see the recovery on people's faces at these meetings, and it's an absolute joy for me to be able to participate in any types of groups like this. My home group is a home group that about, I think it was late 1997, we decided there was basically a small meeting that I had at my house. And what would happen is people would come over, mainly the people that I sponsored would come over, and we would go through the book Alcoholics Anonymous, and we would follow the spiritual exercises and the instructions for the steps in this book. And a lot of people really started to change. People who had been in AA for decades, relapsing time and time again, never really getting there. You know, being able to go in and do the meetings and get consistent with the meetings and make coffee and all that stuff. But they, for one reason or another, they weren't able to stay. They would relapse, maybe 6 months, maybe 2 years, maybe 5 years. And I ended up sponsoring some of these people, and we were over at my house, and we would go through the big book. And it seemed to make a really big difference in their lives. It certainly made a big difference in mine. So we started a meeting at this church in late 1997. And this went against current procedure in Alcoholics Anonymous at that time. There was step meetings where you'd read from the 12 and 12. There was speaker meetings where two people would speak and there'd be a leader, and any knucklehead in the world could sign up and take a meeting hostage. You know, it didn't matter if they had anything to say. They were going to say it anyway in these formats. And then there was the discussion meeting. That's all there was. So all of a sudden, we put this big book workshop meeting together, which was about the teaching and the practice of the 12 steps. And, you know, there was some resistance to it. There was some eyebrows raised in the area. You know, what are those guys doing over at that meeting? You know, are you one of them? You know, there was a lot of suspicion. But what happened in that group is the people who cycled through that group were basically given enough enthusiasm and enough motivation to actually do the 12 steps. You see the 12 steps up on the wall here. What has happened in the last 40 or 50 years of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's really become optional to do this. And, you know, this really is our recovery process. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous is a 12-step fellowship. You would think that would mean something, but there are groups where it's more important to allow people the freedom to experience this AA the way they want to in their own time, which is fine unless you're in real trouble with alcoholism. You know, if you're in real trouble with alcoholism, the fact of the matter is that you're suffering from something that is going to compel you to go back to alcohol or to go slowly crazy. There's just something inside the alcoholic that's just not right. Sobriety becomes untenable to us after a period of time without a personality change sufficient, you know, to be able to change the way we think, to be restored to sanity, to get to a place where we can find a way and find a defense against the first drink. So this meeting is going on, and a lot of people that are cycling through are recovering from alcoholism, and you can really tell in somebody's eyes when that happens. There's a light that goes on. There's a personality shift. There's an awakening of the spirit. And a lot of people that cycled through here, you know, went back to wherever they were and they started their own big book meetings. And you know, in our area, that genesis of the Burnsville Home Group has contributed to the renaissance that's going on in the North Jersey area and some other areas, which is basically, you know, some groups are not okay with just going to meetings and sharing. They want something more from AA. You know, there's different types of alcoholics. There's different types of drinkers too. If you see 100 people at a bar, you know, some of them will just go in there and they'll get into self-pity and they'll kind of like cry in their booze. There's another group of people that'll go in there and they'll start to get amorous. They'll start to look around, you know, for somebody to score with. And then there's the type of alcoholic who starts drinking and just wants more, you know. Let's go to the city, you know. Well, it's 11 o'clock at night on a Tuesday. I don't care. Let's go. You know, that's the type of alcoholic who wants more from alcohol. You know, they want to go get cocaine so that they can drink for 3 days straight. You know, that's the type of alcoholic that loves these kind of meetings because they want more from AA than to sit there and share. You know, they want to feel better. They want a new experience. And so, you know, I absolutely love these types of meetings because this is just where I see the lifeblood of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I'm an alcoholic from way back. I believe that alcoholism is a genetic bullet. I don't believe too much anymore about the causality, like we're alcoholic because we had a bad childhood. Or we're alcoholic because, you know, there was a lot of bad breaks and, you know, and we had a lot of pressure. I don't really believe that anymore. I believe that there's a susceptibility to alcoholism that comes with us genetically. You see it in the Irish, you know. You see it with the Catholic priests. There's just groups. There's just groups of people where it's just a little bit more prevalent, you know, than with other groups. So I just really believe that it's genetic. And I got hit with the bullet. Not really anybody else in my family got hit with this bullet, but I did. And I'll tell you why I think I was alcoholic. When it talks about the 12 steps, there's a dash in the first step, that our lives had become unmanageable. I think that we have a spiritual malady that comes along with that genetic inheritance. And it's just a little bit different than maybe somebody else. The first time that, looking back on it now, from recovery, looking back on it now, the first manifestation of my alcoholism, the unmanageability, the spiritual malady, was the day my mother was driving me. She said, okay, it's time to, you got to start going to school now. Kindergarten's going to start. You know, put on your clothes. I'm taking you across town to kindergarten. And she drove me across town in the car, and she opened up the door, and she said, there's the classroom. I'll come back in 4 hours for you. And closed the door and took off. And I remember standing up on this hill looking down at this schoolhouse, and there's kids already running around playing kickball and tag. They've already made friends. And I'm standing up on the hill like this. You know, I was just inundated with self-centered fear. I was thinking, you know, what if they don't like me? You know, what if I get beat up? What if I make a fool of myself? I was riddled with this self-centered fear, but I knew I had to go do this kindergarten thing. So I walked down the hill and I acted as if everything was okay inside me, but everything was not okay inside me. I was an absolute wreck. Now, you know what would have really helped me do that kindergarten thing? A pint of whiskey. You know, if I would have had a pint of whiskey, I'd have been doing that kindergarten thing. I'd have been the kindergarten kid. And, you know, what is that about? What that's about is alcohol is a solution for an alcoholic. It's a bad solution for an alcoholic, but what it does is it takes care of that internal condition that's messed up within us.
20 years later, I was a bad electrician who could just make it through the day and get in my car and drive to the liquor store 100 miles an hour. And I would walk into the liquor store, and I knew exactly where my Gordon's vodka or my George Dickel bourbon was, and I'd head over there, and I'd grab it, and I'd, start moving for the cash register. And God forbid if there's somebody in the line in front of me who's asking the guy about what kind of wine goes with fish, Does it have a nice bouquet, Get the hell out of my way! I got a problem here. I got to get this vodka. I got to get out of here. I got a problem. I'm sober. I need to start drinking. And now think about this for a minute. Is my problem the booze? No, the booze is going to solve my problem in about 10 minutes if you get the hell out of my way. And I can start drinking it. Now, what is that? So many people think our problem is the alcohol. Yes, alcohol is a real bad solution to that internal spiritual dilemma that we have. But we need something. We need something to be able to cope because sobriety becomes untenable. Sometimes slowly, by minutes and inches. Sometimes we recognize that we've got to sober up. I got to stop drinking. One more DUI and I'll be walking until there's Jetson mobiles, I've been thrown out of the house. I lost another job. I came to out of a blackout with a summons in my pocket. This happens to us. So we get sober. But what happens after day after day after day of sobriety? What happens? Things get a little more gray. Things get a little more difficult to deal with. We become cranky. You ever been cranky? In a dry spell? Like where people are like, I'm going to buy you the booze myself. You're a complete asshole when you're not drinking, That's the real alcoholic that the book Alcoholics Anonymous talks about. We just don't do really well. Now, the amazing thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is it was peopled in the early days with these types of drunks, these types of alcoholics. These were some bad cases. And there was many, many times where they recognized that the worst thing they could possibly do is put alcohol into their body. They all knew that. But what happened? What happened? The obsession of the mind came on. And they were compelled, they were driven to go back to the bar or back to the liquor store and start drinking again. And these were the people who put together the program of recovery. And they recognized early on that we don't need sobriety, we need recovery. There has to be a fundamental change within us to make sobriety tenable. To make sobriety enjoyable, to be able to be okay with ourselves and with our environment. And without that change, we're just, we're a drunk waiting to happen. And that, I think, is the most amazing thing about the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, that they got it right. These weren't really the smartest people in the world. You start studying some of our history, you start to see just what kind of characters were involved with putting this together. There was a really bad proctologist with big hands. And he was running out of proctors to work on because he would shake and stink of booze. So you're getting your proctor worked on, and he's like, you're getting a second opinion fast. That's one co-founder. The other guy was running around Wall Street trying to talk people out of money. It was like an NA guy would. Not that I judge. Anyway, these are the type of guys who put this program together. It's just a miracle. It's a miracle that they got it right. They saw that it was our spirit that was damaged. The alcohol played a role in it. The alcohol was a symptom of our true problem, which is that spiritual malady. Now, I'm going to AA meetings like crazy. Here's basically what happened. I was drinking way too much. It was catching my attention because my eyes were yellow. I was about 130 pounds soaking wet. I was getting unbelievably violent, you know, when I was in these blackouts, and then I'd be told about it like the next day. That, any blackout drinkers in here? You know, you ever wake up in different cities and stuff like that? That's cause for concern. You know, I was doing things like, I did this one time. I called up my boss in a black, I'm going to kill you, you bastard, I'm going to kill you. And because it was a blackout, I didn't remember. So I just walk in and work the next day. What the hell are you doing here? I'm like, what? What's your problem, man? I mean, I was doing that kind of stuff. I was coming to in jail going, I'm in jail. What the hell happened? Last thing I remember, I was at a party. I'm in jail now. I learned never wake up your bunkmate and ask him. You know, they can get cranky, and they don't really care. This kind of stuff was happening to me all the time. So I decided I got to do something about this drinking. My first mistake, do something about the drinking. And I signed myself into rehab, and I was going outpatient, and they pushed me toward AA, so I'm going to AA. And I don't really realize what the treatment for alcoholism is. What I'm trying to treat, or what I'm trying to achieve, is sobriety. And that works for a heavy drinker. That works for a disco drunk. It does not work for somebody who's gone down the scale with alcoholism as far as I have. I'm shattered. And I'm going to the discussion meeting. Listen to people talk about gratitude. Like, I'll show you gratitude. I'll slash all four of your tires out of the car and see how grateful you are, you hypocritical bastard. You know, I wasn't saying that, but I was thinking it, you know. And people would come up, hey, Chris, how you doing? Great, great. You got an extra knife. I got some stuff to do after the meeting. I mean, that's out of my mind. I remember this one guy in outpatient, he'd raise his hand, he'd take the whole outpatient, the whole 2 hours, talking about his problems, just talking about his problems. And he would say, you know, if it gets any worse, I'm going to jump in front of a bus. I feel like jumping in front of a bus. So I go down to the nurse's station. I go, I need to use the phone for a minute. And they go, what for? I go, I need to get some bus schedules. Right? I was no vision for you in the early days, you know. Patience and tolerance was not something I understood. But I'm going to this because they're telling me this is what you have to do. You have to go to these groups where people talk about their problems all day long. Yeah? And so I'm going. But I don't understand what I'm doing. I don't understand how this can help. But I am kind of staying sober. And then one day, on the way to an AA meeting, the thought crossed my mind that a gallon of vodka would help me stay sober. I swear. Listen, you know, the obsession of the mind doesn't care how it makes you put alcohol back in your body. I really didn't want to put alcohol back in my body. I really wanted to stay sober. I wanted to do this AA thing, even though I hated it. I wanted to not cause the trouble and feel the way I was feeling in my life. So I thought that if I drank a gallon of vodka, it would remind me of just how bad this whole thing is. And I'll go back into AA with like a renewed fortitude, you know. So I drank this gallon of vodka, and it was a mistake, you know. Like, pass that one by your sponsor, you know what I mean? Listen, you know, I'm thinking about doing a better job in AA. I'm going to get a gallon of vodka. You know, I think that's kind of what sponsors are for, to help out with newcomer plans. Anybody in here ever hear the newcomer plans? My absolute favorite is, I can sell drugs now because I won't use them all. That's my favorite. Oh. Anyway, so here I am, I'm drinking a gallon of vodka. Good idea, good idea. All of a sudden, like three drinks into it, I realized the enormity of my mistake. And I was back out for 7 months. And it was the darkest, bleakest, most unbelievably pathetic, lonely, disgusting, decadent period of time in my life. I was just drinking for oblivion. They talk about it. They talk about it in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. Drinking for oblivion. Drinking to shut your head off. Drinking to just shut everything out because you just can't take it anymore. And it finally culminated in Christmas of 1989, where I'm at my mother's house, and my brother and sister and nieces and nephews, and it was Christmas, and the Christmas tree is a presents under the tree. They're singing Christmas carols. The stockings are hung by the chimney with care, and everybody's like real happy and family. And I go into a drunken blackout where I threaten them all with a .38 caliber handgun. All right, I'm gonna kill you all. That's not the festive type of mood that they were really looking for, And so they all packed up their Christmas and took it elsewhere, And I come to, like, on the floor, and there's vodka bottles piled this high in the sink, and I start to go into a really, really bad case of the DTs. Anybody in here ever suffer from the delirium tremens, where you see things and there's maggots on you and animals are running around, things are scratching on the house to get in, and there's marching bands playing? Where the hell does that come from? Marching bands. Do you hear that? Oh, my God. If I'm sitting in a beginner's meeting and you can hear the choir music from upstairs, I'll look over at the newcomer and I'll go, yeah, it's for real. They're playing music upstairs. Oh. So I came back into Alcoholics Anonymous this time. I didn't care that the discussion meetings were stupid. I didn't care that the coffee was bad. I didn't care that the people were lame. I was absolutely desperate, And I came back in and I said, I'm dying. Tell me what to do. And I think that willingness born of desperation was able to keep me sober until I recognized what recovery was all about. I was not hearing it in the meetings. This is not unusual to not hear about recovery in the meetings, except when someone reads this at the beginning of the meeting. It's not unusual. It's just the way Alcoholics Anonymous is kind of transformed. There's been a lot of outside influences and inside influences on AA over the years. And that is what it is. It's about the freedom of the fellowship to be the way they want to be. How I learned about recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous was one of my friends, Radio Shack Mike, handed me 8 90-minute cassette tapes and said, "You're hardcore. I hated these guys, but you might like them." And gave me these 8 tapes, and they were basically a Joe and Charlie Big Book workshop. This is like late 1990, early 1991. And I listened to these things, and the first thing that happened to me was I got pissed off. Because these tapes were basically telling me I had no program. I was going to 14 meetings a week. I was making coffee. I was a treasurer over here, a secretary over here. In New Jersey, they have the no-show GSR commitment. I was doing that. You know what I mean? I was doing everything that I was being asked of me. I was driving the boobies from the hatch to the meeting. I was going out to the diner afterward. I was doing all this stuff. Everybody was patting me on the head. "Chris, you're doing really good. I see you everywhere. Oh, you're really doing. I was not doing good. I was falling apart inside. The spiritual malady was running rampant because all that stuff is not treatment for alcoholism. What it is it creates an atmosphere of sobriety that hopefully enables the person to for their head to clear enough and for their ears to open up enough to hear about the recovery process. So I get these 90-minute tapes, and I start listening to them, and these guys from Arkansas are telling me I have no program and I don't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. I get a big resentment for people from Arkansas halfway through these tapes. You gotta understand. But what happened was, the truth will sometimes haunt you if you're alcoholic. Have you ever had somebody say something in a meeting that just really pissed you off and it kind of haunted you and you had to internalize it? You had to work it through in your head because it disturbed you so much? Well, that's what these tapes did. And I started to think about some of the things that they said. And then about, I don't know, I might have been about 10 months sober, maybe a year sober. I don't really remember. Some bad things happened in my life. I had met Mrs. God's Will for Me when I had about a year sober, you know. I remember going up to my sponsor and saying, Phil, I met this girl and we really like each other. And there was terror on his face. You know what I mean? Because, like, if you're a sponsor, that's the last thing you want to hear. Because that's going to mean an uninterrupted series of phone calls for the next 6 months, which is drama, you know? So he goes, Chris, who is this? And I tell him, and he goes, listen, I want to tell you that there's probably one chance in 5,000 that's going to work out. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. What about a month into this, you know, it blows up like the Hindenburg. I lose my job and I smash up my car. I mean, three things in like 1 week. So I'm in crisis. In the book Alcoholics Anonymous, it says that we will not be able to maintain through the trials and low spots ahead unless we're in fit spiritual condition, is basically what the book says. I was not in fit spiritual condition. I was in fit sober condition because I was doing all the fellowship and all the service stuff. But I had no real spiritual condition because I hadn't changed. I was still the crazy alcoholic just with no booze. So I know I'm going to drink. I'm going to kill myself. Something bad is going to happen. And I remember those tapes. What I did was I took those tapes back out. I opened the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. I started listening to the tapes. I got a notebook. And where there was an instruction to actually do something, I actually did it. And I didn't do this out of any sense of virtue. I did it out of like a sense of survival, a sense of really being tired of feeling bad all the time, of just my emotions just ripping me up. And what happened was as I started to go through those exercises in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, and I did not do a good job at it. Let me tell you, I didn't have any guidance except for listening to some tapes. But what happened was they started to address my sick spirit. They started to address my sick spirit. The thing that the early AAs learned was you don't attack alcoholism with sobriety. You attack it with spiritual change. Because that's the only thing they ever saw that was long-lasting. So I don't know it at the time, but I start to change. People see it before I do. And they just see me just becoming more comfortable with myself is probably the first thing that happened. And now it's about 2 years or so. I'm sober 2, maybe 3 years. I'm a good way into the recovery process. Things have really changed in my life. And by this time, I'm sponsoring people. And what was happening was I was sponsoring the way I was sponsored, which was basically, here's my phone number. Give me a call when you feel like talking. Give me a call when you're in trouble. I want to see you at these meetings here, you know, I'm here if you need me. Basically like a sponsorship of invitation. So I start sponsoring that way. I've meanwhile kind of gone through the big book to a degree. So there's some real changes in me, but I'm not doing that with my guys. I'm sponsoring you had to give it away the way you got it was one of the things that everybody would say. So what happened was a lot of my guys were drinking on me. You ever have anybody drink on you when you're sponsored? That's make you look bad, you know? Is Harry yours? You know, he's hitting on the new women and he's borrowing money. Harry's mine. I'll talk to him. You know, I mean, makes you lose some status. So So I come to the conclusion that, you know, these tapes, now I'm listening to Joe Hawk and Mark Houston and a whole bunch of other people. I'm really getting into this recovery stuff. I was listening to it a long time before I was actually perfecting it in my life. Let me tell you that. But anyway, I started to bring people over to my house that I sponsored. And this is basically how that group, the Spiritual Awakenings group, started. We would, you know, start on the title page and work through Dr. Bob's nightmare. It was actually Dr. Bob's patient's nightmare. Because if you know the story, he was drunk during that last operation. You know, he's going to take care of somebody's proctor. And he'd been drinking in Atlantic City. And Bill was freaked out, so he gave him a bunch of beers and a bunch of downers and said, "Get in there, Bob! Get in!" So, I mean, it's Dr. Bob's patient's nightmare. But we would go through this. We would go through this, and, you know, these guys would, some of them would make it through. You know, some of the hardcore, you know, mad dog alcoholics would just do it. And then some of them would realize that this stuff Chris is asking me to do is an overreaction to a problem I really have under control. And you know, and really what happened was the people from like 1994 on, the people that have gone through this with me, every single one of them is still sober. They might have had some relapses here and there, but every single one of them is still sober, card-carrying member in AA in good standing and working with other people. The people who balked at the fourth step or left something out of the fifth or really thought, you know, actually going and paying the money back is a little inconvenient, you know, I'm going to dodge that one, you know. Those people are all gone. I think of it this way. If you're in real trouble with alcohol, if you don't put enough into this AA recovery process, you're not going to get enough back to be able to stay. You're just going to, over a course of time, you're just going to kind of slowly back away, and all of a sudden you're going, "Hey, remember so-and-so? Haven't seen him in a while." You'll be one of those. Not necessarily everybody that backs out of AA drinks. But I think that if you're an alcoholic and you back out of AA, what you're doing is you're really putting your quality of life at risk. Because even if you do stay sober, listen, a lousy sobriety is really dying an alcoholic death. That's really what it is. So you're going to either die with alcoholism or you're going to die from it. I don't want to die from it. I don't want to die an angry, bitter, you know, depressed, anxious person, you know, without booze. I don't want to die that way. So anyway, some of the things that I've experienced in Alcoholics Anonymous over the years have pretty much been remarkable. One of the things it says in the book is God will give you so much more than you would have wanted for yourself, you know, had you been in charge. And if somebody gave me a piece of paper on day one and said, "Chris, write down everything you want Alcoholics Anonymous to give to you," I would have so shortchanged myself. You know, there are so many remarkable things that I've been able to experience because of the recovery process in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, some of my experience with the steps, after listening to these tapes, I kind of had a clue that this was really the right book to use for the instructions. However, very early on, I remember my sponsor, this is before I had listened to any tapes or anything, I remember my sponsor saying, "Chris, you might want to do a four-step. It's about time, you know, I think you might be starting to consider a four-step." He did this to me at about 6 months. And so he didn't give me any instructions on the four-step. He just told me that I should go do one. That's not that unusual for the 80s. So I did. I figured, okay, I'm going to do a four-step because you heard a lot of people sharing about their four-step in meetings back then. You didn't hear a lot of people sharing about amends, but you heard a lot of people sharing about doing the four-step. It was almost like you had to do that to be able to say you were an AA man, you know? So, okay, I'm going to go do a four-step. What will I do? I know. I'll start to go to a lot of step meetings. So I started to go to like four step meetings a week.
I got myself a 12 and 12, and then I sat down to do my four step. And I remembered an exercise that I was asked to do in rehab, which was basically a life story. So I confused the four step with a life story and a list of character defects and things that I'd been hiding. And that's what I did. I put together this long list of life story, things that I, you know, character defects that I have and bad things that I've done that I never told anybody. And I went out with my sponsor and I read this. Now, looking back on it, what I realized what I did was it was very confessional. And confession is something that's a spiritual practice in many religions. It's been around, you know, thousands of years. It's a great spiritual exercise. But you don't learn anything from it. What you're confessing is you're confessing stuff that you already know. You already have all this stuff inside. Yes, you're opening up about it, and that's a valid spiritual exercise. But what the fourth step asks us to do is something much deeper than that. We're to look for the causes and conditions of our failure at life. We're to dig deep in there and to discover the true nature of our wrongs, the true nature of our character defects. And that's something significantly different than just confessing things. So after I got this, the instructions from the tapes, I did the four-column inventory, which is basically what person, place, or institution are you angry with and why. Those are the first two columns. Then you have to look at your nature itself. You have to look at your instincts and your ambitions. If I'm mad, it's usually because something is harming, threatening, or interfering with money, power, or sex. Those are my three motivators. You know, if you want to disturb me, threaten, harm, or interfere with my money, my power, my sex. So I need to look at the areas of self it talks about in the fourth step. And that was a discovery, because now I start to see the motivators of my anger. I start to actually learn what gets me angry. And then the most important thing that I learned from the fourth step was the fourth column, which is, what is my part? There's no freedom in knowing what's wrong. A lot of times in AA, we're so interested in knowing what the problem is. Sometimes knowing is the booby prize in AA. What I had to look for in the fourth column was, how had I contributed to these situations? Where did I act selfishly or self-seeking? Where did I act out of fear? And where was I dishonest? And in every single one of these resentments, I found at least one of the four parts of the fourth column. Now, where the freedom comes, and where your spirit starts to change, is when you start to take responsibility for these things. It's hard to talk to a newcomer and explain this to a newcomer because they get scared. They start to think that they're never going to be able to make amends for their behavior. And they're right. They're not yet able to make amends for their behavior. Their spirit hasn't healed enough. Like, if you're putting a four-step together and you start to see, oh my God, I'm going to have to make all these amends. Well, you don't have the power to make those amends yet. There's a number of steps that have to happen to enable the power to work in and through you for you to be able to go out and make those amends. But I found that going out and making the amends, where I had been selfish, where I had been self-seeking, where I had acted out of fear, and where I had been dishonest, was a major part of my spirit healing, a major part of me becoming comfortable with myself and my environment. I was tore up inside emotionally, and there needed to be some type of exorcism, you know, for me to be able to have a personality change. And because alcoholism is so aggressive, the recovery process is aggressive. You know, you have to do this, knock on a lot of doors and make amends. This wasn't something that I was looking forward to. but it was something that I was willing to do when I got up to the ninth step, because I just didn't want to, I didn't want to suffer from active alcoholism anymore. And I knew deep down inside that if I held back on this recovery process, if I held back on it, the time and the place would come and alcohol would go back in my body. And that's just something that, you know, I'll participate in my recovery process as hard as I possibly can to keep that from happening. So I did. I went out and I made direct amends. I've gone through the steps a number of times. Probably three or four times I've completed amends lists. And you don't complete the amends, especially with family. You know, there's living amends. You have to be a different person like the rest of your life, really, to make a full amends to some of these people. But you can make the approach. You can make the demonstration. You can try to set right the wrong where you can. Now, being an alcoholic, being that guy who had the scared kindergartner inside of him, that never left me, by the way. Going through school, like, to the 12th grade, I was still terrified of, like, speaking in class and things like that. I still had that repressed anxiety. There was a period of time when I think it was, like, about 19 years old, where I started to try to cut down on my drinking and to use other things instead of drinking, you know, other non-conference-approved things. So I was about that business of trying these other things, and some of them were hallucinogenic, and some of them you smoked, and it got me to kind of a very mellow place. But inside me, I recognized that my spirit was broken and needed to be healed somehow intuitively. So I started to reach out in different spiritual directions when I was 19 or 20. I remember reading a lot of Alan Watts books, and I read P.D. Ouspensky, and, you know, The Course in Miracles, and there was a lot of stuff being published at that time that I was looking into, because I was trying to find an answer to what was wrong with me. What the hell is wrong with me? I don't feel good. You know, there's something that's definitely different with me than it is with other people. And I started to look into the spiritual stuff, but I made one mistake. And that mistake was I was learning it. I was learning from these books. I was not doing. In Alcoholics Anonymous, one of the biggest mistakes we make is that we need to learn this stuff. A lot of people come to the big book workshops and things like that to learn. That doesn't do you any good. We have to live this stuff. It's not about learning. It's about acting. It's not about thinking. It's about behavior. So what I did not do when I was 19 to 22, when I was searching out all this spiritual stuff, is I didn't act on it. I didn't make any changes. I didn't do any significant practices. I just was reading it, and I was learning it intellectually. So about 23 years old, 24 years old, my alcoholism just caught up with me, and I dropped everything but the booze and just went to town on the booze. And I missed that window where my spirit was basically saying, you need to do something here. So for the next 15 years or so, I was drinking like a madman. Now I get into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I get through the fourth step, I get through the eighth step, and I start the ninth step, and I start to look at step 10 and step 11. Those are very, very spiritual steps. They have a lot to do with our behavior. They have a lot to do with how we move through the day, what we do in the morning when we wake up, what we do at night before we retire, what we're supposed to watch for, how are some of the ways we're supposed to react when things crop up and pop up in front of us. How are we to react to life happening at us? And I start to realize that these steps, these are the real healing steps. These steps are to help me to develop a spirituality, to develop an operational methodology that's based on spiritual principles instead of selfish, self-centered ones. And I'm really grateful for those steps today, especially the 11th step. The wonderful thing about the 11th step is, yes, we need to practice the disciplines as they're written in the 11th step. But as well as doing that, we can do a whole lot of other things. We can be We can be mad people in our religions. You know, we can get in there and we can be members of the church like you wouldn't believe. We can study Buddhism, and you know, we can run all around the planet to, you know, doing these great cool things and reading all these spiritual books and practicing all these disciplines, and it's a whole lot of fun. There's a lot of latitude in it. It's broad, roomy, and all inclusive. You know, never exclusive or forbidding. And we can allow our spirits to, now that they've healed, for our spirits to grow. And we can grow in understanding, and we can grow in effectiveness. But the major thing that happens to us with the practice of these disciplines, especially step 11, is we get the power. I'm telling you, Alcoholics Anonymous is not about sobriety. It's about two things that I see: power and freedom. That's what my AA is about. I have the power to do some amazing things in my life today. You know, to be promotable, you know, to be a good husband, to be a good family member, to do things that I would have been so afraid to do before recovery that you have no idea. The biggest fear I had prior to recovery was public speaking, if you can imagine, you know. I mean, that fear's got to have left. You know, so the power that works in and through it's the power greater than ourselves that they promise us in these steps. The power to absolutely transform our lives into what they can be. It is absolutely amazing. And the more you practice these disciplines, the more power works in and through you. And I totally believe today that it is not my power. The most arrogant thing I could do is take credit for that power that's working in and through me. What I do is I place myself in the spiritual climate by being willing to practice these steps. I place myself in the spiritual climate, the spiritual atmosphere, where the sunlight of the Spirit can burn down on me and offer me that power and that strength and that direction. You know, the sunlight of the Spirit, I can expose myself to the sunlight of the Spirit, but I am not the sun. This power greater than ourselves comes from God, a God of whatever understanding you have. It can be a God of the universe. It can be a God of nature. It can be a Christian God. It can be a Buddhist God. It is the manifestation of the divine. And anybody that's felt this knows exactly what I'm talking about. We're able to do what we could never do on our own unaided will. All of a sudden, that obsession to go back to alcohol just doesn't come anymore. And we're free of that obsession. And we're not fighting it like we were when we were trying to stay sober one day at a time. We're not fighting it anymore. The problem has been removed as long as we continue consistently to practice the recovery principles and live a spiritual life. Now, all these steps, step 1 through 11, are about preparation for the real work in Alcoholics Anonymous. The real work in Alcoholics Anonymous is to carry this message to the still sick and the still suffering. I love this book. You want to know what the most avoided or misunderstood chapter in this book is? Working with others. It's an absolute marvelous chapter. It teaches you how to find people to work with and what to do with them once you've found them. But when I got sober, nobody was doing anything close to what was in that chapter. They were encouraging me not to drink. The chapter, Working with Others, shows us how to help people find freedom from alcoholism. There's a big difference between encouraging somebody to stay sober and showing them how to recover. And in this book, it talks about the first visit, the second visit. Leave this book. Start working the steps. It's got it all in here. And for the longest time, I just saw it as like an antiquated chapter where, you know, maybe the hardcore guys, the first 100, would do this. But we've learned in AA that there's much better ways. We share with these people. We don't tell them what to do. We share. We don't want to hurt their feelings. And so things changed a lot over the years in Alcoholics Anonymous. But what I did about 10 years ago is I started pretending that this was actually how you're supposed to work with people. So if somebody asks me to sponsor them, I tell them, okay, the first thing you need to do is read the book. It tells you to do that in here. It says, on your first visit, leave this book with the individual. After they read it, when you come back, you can ask them if they're willing to go to any lengths. Because you've offered them the dignity of understanding what any lengths is. If they've read this book, that's what any lengths is. Any lengths isn't, you know, doing a 90 and 90. Any lengths isn't, you know, making coffee until the grinds come out your ears. Any length is the first 164 pages. So I'll do that. And I found something very interesting out. About half the people don't even do that. They don't read and come back to me. They're like annoyed that they've been given homework. Let me tell you, those are the people that just want a drama coach. They don't want a sponsor, they want a drama coach. They want somebody to be on the other end of the phone when their life is burning up. And it tells us in here that's not what we're for. Our time is too valuable for that. So this is what I've been doing. And I got to tell you, I've had some good results. Now, do people not participate in this? Absolutely. But the people that participate in it, they're not always the guys I want to sponsor. But the people that do this recover and they help other people. And I am so about quality over quantity today that you have no idea. I'm not interested in how many people are in a meeting anymore. I'm interested in what are those people doing that are in that meeting. Are they about the business of recovery or are they hanging on to sobriety with their fingernails? I'm much more interested in quantity over quality. Much of Alcoholics Anonymous in the last 30 or 40 years has been interested in the opposite. They're way more interested in opening the fellowship the doors of the fellowship as wide as they can go. And I have no issue with that. I think if you've got a drinking problem and you can come to AA and you're not going to kill anybody in a motor vehicle accident, please come, you know. But if you're in real trouble, understand that the scale of alcoholism is a real thing. No matter how far down the scale you've gone, you'll find that your experience will benefit others. Your ability to quit drinking on a non-spiritual basis will depend upon the amount of power, choice, and control you've lost in drinking. There's a lot of references in this book to the fact that some are sicker than others. If you're one of those sicker than others, this is your path. Let me tell you, even you can recover. Even if you're sitting there thinking, but my case is different, you know, which is most of us think that. This path is transformational. It's absolutely transformational. And that's why I'm passionate about this stuff. I'm tired of seeing alcoholics die. I'm tired of seeing alcoholics go to AA, stay sober for a short period of time, say, to hell with this. This is crazy. I'm tired of hearing about somebody's fan belt not working. I'm out of here. I'm tired of seeing those people leave. And then when they're in prison or they're dying from cirrhosis, somebody asks them, well, didn't you go to AA? I went to AA. It didn't work. They didn't even know that they weren't participating in AA. They didn't even know it. They thought going to meetings was the treatment. And I'm tired of seeing people like that die. So that's basically why I'm passionate about this stuff. And that's why I get up on my high horse. I'm tired of seeing the suffering, you know. And I love alcoholics. I love alcohol. We are the craziest, wackiest, most interesting, most non-boring people in the world. You know what I mean? We are not going to bore people. You know what I mean? Who knows what we're going to do? I love that. I love that. Because I'm the type of alcoholic who, after three or four drinks, I want to go to the city.
So that's what I want my AA to be like. I want more out of AA than just sitting around sharing. That's all I got next.